Hello and welcome to Opus. I'm Gretchen Gondek, and support for Opus today is brought to you by Gregory Giles, an investment advisor representative with Legacy Financial LLC in Sioux City. Legacy has been serving the financial planning and investment needs of clients since 2004. More information about Legacy Financial and Greg Giles is available at 712-587-8070. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Financial planning and advisory services offered through RDA Financial Network. And I'd like to welcome as our special guest today, Mary Watts, who we know is employed at the Sioux City Symphony office, and occasionally you see her on the stage playing the most beautiful instrument, the harp. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Gretchen. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your background as a harpist and, of course, your education and training.
Well, I began the harp at age 9. I did not know how to read any music, and I started on a lever harp, which is a sister relationship to the Celtic harp. And I really started learning Celtic music early, and I played in a band when I was a young teenager. I wasn't even probably allowed to be in bars, but I was playing in bars with an Irish group. But I was by-ear player, which means that I could hear it and then play it back, but I wasn't necessarily a very strong reader. I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, where a very wonderful liberal town full of all sorts of music and all sorts of people. Began playing with the youth orchestra, moving on to a concert grand pedal harp, and I was very fortunate to have an excellent orchestral teacher who conducted the citywide Lincoln Youth Symphony. And it was this woman that really pushed me into playing as an ensemble player versus a solo player. And they are quite different in the types of training and the all the aspects that go into being able to be an ensemble player. So I fell in love with orchestral music, and then later on went to music camps, finishing up going to St. Louis Conservatory and finishing half of a bachelor degree, going on to New England Conservatory in Boston, where I finished my bachelor and received a graduate diploma in harp performance. I've been so blessed with excellent harp teachers. Francis Tiatov, former St. Louis Symphony principal harp, and then on to Ann Hobson Pilot, 45-year career as the principal harpist of the Boston Symphony and appointed by Leonard Bernstein. So I just really have had some great teachers who have been my mentors, and then I can't be remiss without bringing up a jazz harpist and technical monster, Mr. Harvey Griffin, who passed away in 2007. He was the National Symphony's principal harp and decided he'd hang it up and go on the road with a jazz trio. And he was first and foremost in this sort of playing style. Alice Coltrane, of course, was also doing some work, John Coltrane's wife, but nothing to this degree. Everything was so arranged, and it was drums, bass, and electric harp. But Harvey taught me technique, and he taught me to count, and he taught me to just be, I had a real monster technique at one time. So I felt like I could roll out of bed and, play major works. So that's a little bit about me. My parents always had music in the household. I was kind of a kid that didn't get into trouble because I was practicing or rehearsing with a youth orchestra, and had really good music ed training on a junior high and high school. So that's my big push towards good quality music in the schools. So that's a little bit about me.
And what is it about the harp that it draws your interest? And that must have started very early.
It did. My oldest sister, we're the bookends. Carol Ann's the oldest, I'm the youngest. And Carol Ann had a friend who played harp, and we won a Mother's Day brunch to a restaurant where she was playing, and I was absolutely mesmerized. Being the youngest of originally six children, I would watch my siblings practice piano, and then when they went to school, I was told that I was, by age three, playing Born Free on the piano, and I couldn't even... I had this ear, and then we were always host family to foreign people, and we had a man that played piano in a restaurant, and he was from Uruguay, and he would play music for me, and he was basically teaching me how to play the piano, but everything was by ear. And so when I saw Sarah playing in that restaurant, she invited me up on her little podium. She said, "Would you like to play something?" And she says, "Just know that the red strings are C and the black are F." So to me, that was like a white keyed piano. And so I just started playing. And she said she would take me as a student immediately. And it was one of those things where notes and key signatures are like visual colors to me. So it's like a palette. You know, if you think of G major, you know, that might be yellow, or green is F major. Your flat keys can be blue or purple. And it was just this weird kind of way. I had to be tutored in math all the way through school. And as a lefty, I would do my sevens and nines backwards and my B's and D's backwards. But somehow music helped me overcome my struggle with mathematics. So I could memorize intricate fingerings on the harp because of I equated numbers to notes. So it's kind of weird. But anyway, and so I just could pick up playing harp by ear. I mean, later on I really had to practice, but it just seemed it was easy. I was a kid. It was easy. It was fun. It was not, my mom never had to go practice the harp. She'd say, "Go play some harp music for me. I've had a rough day." So I'd sit and be like 3 hours later, and it's like, you know. So I really never, you know, got into trouble like some of my other friends did, because they didn't have anything like that, you know. I loved animals. I was in 4-H. I had a pony. I did barrel racing and pole bending and raised rabbits, and just had so much to keep busy that, and there was always music in my home. My mother could have had an operatic career. She was really a Wagnerian soprano. She never could blend in the church choir. It was like there was Leela's voice. And my grandmother played piano by ear, so she taught me to play Stardust. And anyway, so it's just, we just had music. We always had music in our family. She was part of my mother was part of an international women's singing group. So there was people from Pakistan and Israel and all over the place, Germany. And we were learning all these, and Australia, so we were learning all this folk music, and I would hear them do their little singing group on a Sunday afternoon and eat their tea, have their tea and have their sandwiches. And it's like, I thought everybody's house was like that. So it was a great experience. My grandfather on my mother's side played beetleback mandolin. My mother's mother, Grandma Cole, played a big, huge Hohner harmonica. So it was just, you know, a lot of cool music. Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. And formerly you were in Des Moines, now you're in Sioux City. And, of course, most of us are familiar with, you know, the beautiful instrument, the harp, which is for concert performances. But you have other harps that you play. Can you talk about your Irish harp?
I do. I have, I would call it a lever harp versus a pedal harp. So a pedal harp has three capabilities of flat, natural, and sharp. By mechanical pedals moving rods up it within the column of the harp, which is like the mast of a ship, and then underneath the neck of the harp are these action plates. And these action plates, it's all mechanically put together. There's over 1,000 working mechanical parts on any concert grand harp. So that is able to change the pitch by a semitone, so flat, natural, and sharp. I own a single action 1903 pedal harp, which has a half step capability. And then where you have your lever harps, those are actually you preset the key you're going to play in prior to playing, and you might tune three flats, and so therefore you can play up to three flats or four flats, and then a couple sharp keys. And those are manual levers. After getting to see some amazing Celtic and Scottish harpists, the speed in which they can move these levers is just incredible. So where they are, the instruments are very alike. They different. They differentiate because of the different technique taken to make these changes chromatically. So I always have loved Celtic music, and went to school and got to meet some people that were from Ireland. And in fact, my best friend, Dervla Mekaterian, is Armenian last name, but she's as Irish as they get. We used to hang out together, and I went to Ireland with her to kind of surprise her mother. And we got to go into these pubs, and, you know, they say music's a universal language, but walked into this Irish pub, and there was, I would call them a harper versus a harpist. And I sat down, and we played tunes, and, you know, we were from two separate sets of the world, and it was the same music. And I think the other neat thing is if you go back to American music and American history, the people that settled in Appalachia, you can have the same tune and it has two different names. So because of the Celtic roots and English music, but that the people that settled in Appalachia, parts of Canada as well, the Irish called it one thing, named it a certain song, and then when it came to Appalachia, it became another name. So, but it's the same tune.
What are some of the features and characteristics of Celtic music?
I think that it's, first of all, I think it's more deceivingly, it's deceiving because when you have somebody playing, let's just take the band, the Chieftains, and they do one jig after the other, how they get in, finish up one and go on to the other, and how they keep track of the second endings and when they're going to move to the next piece in a split second is just really amazing. It's really a gift. But I think some of the, as we'll hear with this CD that I made along with my flute partner at the time, I was the former principal harpist of the Des Moines Symphony for 27 years, and I had just gotten the job, and it wasn't a day before my birthday, and I walked on stage at the Civic Center, and all of a sudden the orchestra started playing Happy Birthday, and I thought, wow, that's really nice of them. How did they know it was my birthday? And the tubist turned at me and said, it's not for you, it's for Kathy Slocum. So we'd already been playing. Kathy was the piccolo player and third flute in the Des Moines Symphony, but we'd already had a few gigs together, jobs, and we didn't realize that we had the same birthday. So I had a great career with Kathy, wonderful working relationship, and so, lack of a better term, name for our flute and harp duo, we became the Aquarian duo. And so we think alike and would many times pull up the same piece at the same time that we were going to play next, and we hadn't even realized that the other one was doing the same thing. So Kathy still remains a close friend, and she's the monster reader, where I'm the arranger. So it worked out great.
And you actually have a couple of CDs that you brought with.
I do.
And since St. Patrick's Day is just around the corner, I thought it'd be a nice treat to hear some of your selections. Do you want to set this up?
Well, I think when Kathy and I put this together, you know, when you do a recital, you kind of do the architectural golden mean where you want to start out with a reflective piece, unless you want to go in chronological or historical order for a classical recital. But I think, and then you want some variation, and then you want to end strong. And so really, Kathy and I took a lot of time putting this together. And I think that the first tune just gives a good rendition of what the two aural textures sound like together. And it's been a while since I've heard this. And Kathy also plays a wooden piccolo on some of these. And so it gives that sense of the tin whistle a little bit. So this is the March Hare, and I arranged this for Kathy and I.
Charming.
Thank you. Kathy, I was just telling Gretchen, Kathy is also a wonderful singer, and her name is Kathy Slocum. Kathy is the former piccoloist and third flute with Des Moines Symphony, and she got that job while she was still an undergraduate at Drake University, and then she went on to get a music ed degree. Kathy and Randy, who did the recording, he's the recording engineer. Randy's former bassist with the Des Moines Symphony. Randy did our recording, and this was recorded at Drake University at very bizarre times. I think we had to stop because of a snow blower going by the building. But, you know, so it's not just one of these one takes. We had a lot of weird stuff happened where we had to re-record, and you know, you kind of lose that freshness. But anyway, this tune really features Kathy on the piccolo, and it's great that she just can, you know, fly up one octave higher than written, and so that's just kind of a penny whistle sound. It's kind of a varied CD. We tried to add some American Irish on there, Danny Boy, which is really the tune from County Derry is what it's really known as. The next selection I'd like for Gretchen to play is track 3. Turlock O'Carolan was a famous blind harper, and he did write much of his music after people. And so you'll see if you go back in the history books, you'll see O'Carolan's quarrel with the landlady, or there's a tune on here called Mrs. Fallon. So a lot of times he didn't have money to pay for his room and board, so he'd write them songs and he'd title them after the certain people that he was asking favors of. But this is Carolan's Dream, and then we're going to go right into, we segue into a famous jig called the Morrison's Jig. Thank you. We heard Carolyn's Dream, which is a Turlock O'Carolyn tune, very famous Blind Harper. And then we went into the famous Morrison's Jig. And the kind of the neat arrangement with that is Kathy and I did some unison playing on that, so we're actually playing the same notes at the same time, which can be great or it can be really laborious. So this one, it turned out well. And then we moved on to Carolyn's Farewell to Music, and they said that's his, before he died, that was the last piece he ever wrote for the harp. And it's just kind of this beautiful kind of rhapsodic kind of piece that I think is just depicting, you know, a little bit of mourning and some premonition about his impending death. Public television used our music for a nature TV broadcast, and I think it was called Second Season, but it was all natural scenes shot in Iowa. And so the piece we last heard was Darren Day, which is a lullaby, and it's a mother kind of cooing to her child. A lot of these tunes I arranged out of just a plain single-lined Celtic book that was written in Gaelic. So I had to call my friend and say, what does this mean? You know, because I don't read Gaelic. I don't speak Gaelic. So I had to call Dervla. She said, oh, it's a mother's lullaby, and it has to do with some sort of not a nightmare, but some sort of kind of a scary thing for a child. It has to do with just not demons, but some sort of folklore. And so that was Darren Day. So there's just a lot of tunes on here. I think, you know, we did feature, we had the tune from County Derry, which is Danny Boy. Everybody loves that. And that's track number 15, if you want to hear that.
And we will be closing our program with that. And I want to say, Mary Watts, it's been absolutely charming and delightful, and we have enjoyed visiting with you, learning so much more about Celtic music, but also what it means to be a harper or a harpist, and appreciate your time very much today. So we're ending with, did you say Danny Boy?
Danny Boy, which is known in Ireland as the tune from County Derry. Thank you.
And with a few minutes remaining in our Opus program today, we're going to hear from the Chieftains next, and the CD that features music from the film score Tristan and Isolde.
Thank you. It appears that in the modern opera diva's career, there comes a time when she questions if she should try something new. Apparently, this is Joyce DiDonato's time. After branching out in more predictable ways on previous recordings, DiDonato and pianist Craig Terry went in a bold new direction for her latest album, Songplay. The end result is an uneven effort with excellent musicians performing in a hodgepodge of styles. DiDonato and Terry assembled a crackerjack ensemble of jazz and tango musicians, but seemingly without a comprehensive plan. DiDonato even admitted, "We didn't quite know what Songplay was until we assembled all the players in the studio." In the end, it is that lack of direction that is the album's undoing. Of the 14 numbers, 6 reflect the original concept. Those songs are from the Italian Songs and Arias collection. The songs are so ubiquitous in the world of classical singing that many singers no longer appreciate their inherent beauty. DiDonato and Terry hoped that by looking at these songs through a new lens and performing them in different styles, they could prove that a good song remains a good song even 300 years later. While discussing how to adapt the material, they recognized similarities to other songs, 8 of which, including Vivaldi arias, musical theater numbers, jazz standards, and contemporary art songs, round out the album. It's unlikely that the wildly mismatched offerings would appeal to one listener in the span of a single hour. There are many good ideas here, but the inconsistency is jarring and leads to the impression that this is a study for 3 separate albums rather than one carefully curated collection. The most troublesome tracks on the album suffer from a clash of styles. In the first selection, a Sei Tu Mami and Star Vicino mashup, DiDonato sings with Baroque ornamentation, despite being accompanied by a salsa tinged with jazz embellishments and harmonies. Clarified that Joyce sings these songs with her own voice. She is not trying to become a jazz singer. There is a difference between technique and style, and had the jazz musicians taken the reins and written DiDonato's ornaments, it's likely her technique would not sound so out of place. The aria, Quella Fiamma, here presented as a tango, and some of the jazz numbers suffered the same fate. Lullaby of Birdland is lively, boisterous, and DiDonato's manicured vowels sound out of place. A small change in diction likely could have helped unify those elements.
Lullaby of Birdland, that's what I always hear when you sigh. Never in my woodland could there be ways to reveal in a phrase how I feel. Have you ever heard 2 turtle doves building coo when they love? That's the kind of magic music we make with our lips when we kiss. And there's a weepy old willow, he really knows how to cry. That's how I cry on my pillow if you should tell me farewell and goodbye.
It is not all dismal, however. Many of the slower tracks are pleasant, while a few stand out as truly enjoyable. A seasoned classical singer might find the adaptations of their favorite arie antiche grating. However, the same arrangement could potentially serve as a gateway for those unfamiliar with classical singing. Caro Mio Ben and Tu Lo Sai, 2 of the songs most commonly assigned to young singers, are performed here as simple, mostly unadorned tunes with a new accompaniment by Terry.
Spirit sound infidel.
extensive instrumental adornment, Di Donato's pristine singing no longer sounds out of place, and the arias sound gently refreshed to those who have not been subjected to years of formal training. Two of the most successful selections, Lean Away and Vedrò con mio diletto, are seemingly barely altered from the original. But one wonders, why were they included on an album centered around new arrangements of old songs? Without a doubt, after hearing Lean Away, I would enjoy an entire album of Di Donato performing Gene Shear songs. And that's the problem. I would also enjoy an album of the jazz musicians improvising on the original Baroque arias without singing. I would also potentially enjoy listening to Di Donato sing jazz, but after being coached extensively in jazz style and with a more cohesive songs. I believe what can be learned from this recording is that if one is to rewrite and rearrange songs in a new style, all vestiges of its previous life must be shed and a new entity must be created. The artist must be inspired by the original, but fully translate the song into their own distinctive style.
Taking pains to find the wind, but until I turned my boat away, the sail could not be trimmed, tacking towards the wind, but never face to face, I feel. Things can't be known.